for oneself. Life is considered to be a state of perception of a desire to attain pleasure, either from receiving or from giving. If the desire to attain pleasure disappears, then the new state is that of unconsciousness, fainting, or death. If a person is in such a state that he clearly sees and feels that it's impossible to receive any more pleasure, for example, because of the shame that he feels for his past actions, if that person experiences suffering that neutralizes even the little happiness that he had had in his life, then that person will want to commit suicide. In that case, a person must put all his efforts into receiving pleasure from performing deeds that are considered good in the eyes of the Creator, and in this manner bring happiness to him. In such thoughts and actions, there exists such a tremendous pleasure that it is capable of neutralizing the greatest suffering in this world. Thus, by means of the surrounding environment, enemies, bankruptcy, or failure in one's work, a person who is ascending spiritually experiences sensations of hopelessness, despair, and a complete lack of meaning of existence. A person may already be at the stage of being able to perform altruistic acts. That is, whatever action that person may be engaged in, the calculations of personal gain will be completely absent from his motivations, and that person will think only of the well-being of the one for whom the act is done, i.e., for the Creator. However, if at the same time that person does not receive pleasure from his altruistic actions, then such actions will be considered as pure giving. For instance, observing the commandments only for the sake of the Creator will not accord that person the light of the Creator or the pleasure that corresponds to each commandment. The reason for this is the fact that the process of self-improvement has not yet been completed. Having received the pleasure from the unobstructed light of the Creator, one would be at a risk of awakening one's egoism, of having egoism demand to receive pleasure at any expense for reasons of self-gratification. At that point, a person would not be able to resist this pleasure, and would obtain it not for the reason of pleasing the Creator, but due to the sheer force of the desire to attain pleasure. Kelim, with which a person performs altruistic acts, are known as vessels of bestowal. A spiritual object has a structure similar to the one of the physical body and consists of 613 organs. In general, the design of the spiritual forces is similar to the physical structures of our body. For this reason, 248 vessels of bestowal are defined as being located above the upper torso of the spiritual object and correspond to the positive spiritual acts which each person is obligated to perform. The light that's received by a person who observes the above spiritual acts is known as the light of grace, or chasidim, or concealed grace, called chasidim mechusim. That is to say, the light of wisdom, or chachma, is concealed from them. If a person possesses strong willpower, then he will rectify his feelings to such an extent that he will not only be able to perform altruistic acts, but will also be able to receive pleasure from them for the sake of the Creator, that is to receive pleasure into the past egoistic desires. This process is known as receiving for the sake of giving. Consequently, that person will be able to receive light that's contained in every spiritual act. The commandments of the Bible are spiritual acts. The fact that every person in our world is obliged to fulfill these commandments, irrespective of the spiritual level of the person, indicates that it's a necessary preliminary stage of the true fulfillment of these commandments in accordance with their primary spiritual goal, to bring pleasure to the Creator. The original stage of an individual attempting to understand the purpose of creation is that of working on oneself for personal gain, or not for his name. Since there are many ways to feel pleasure, for instance by eating, playing games, receiving honors and glory, etc., these methods, however, allow one to feel relatively small and fleeting pleasures. The motivations behind such actions are for the self. By having faith in the Creator, in the fact that He is Almighty, in His oneness with respect to rule over the entire world, including everything that happens to each person, in His dominion over everything that concerns each person, in His willingness to help, even hearing our prayers. Having faith in all of the above, a person can attain much greater pleasures. Only after a person accomplishes the first preparatory stage of the work will he receive very different special sensations of a higher spiritual state. As a result, it will become irrelevant to that person whether he will gain personal benefit from his actions. On the contrary, all his thoughts and calculations will be directed towards attaining spiritual truth. That is, his thoughts and intentions will focus on yielding to the essence of the true laws of creation, to perceiving and carrying out only the will of the Creator, which itself will ensue from the perception of his grandeur and power. Then the person will forget about his past motivations and will realize that he has not the slightest inclination to think or worry about himself, that he completely surrenders to the grandeur of the all-transcending supreme reason and cannot hear the voice of his own reason at all. The main worry of such a person centers on the concern of how to do something pleasing and agreeable for the Creator. Such a state is known as not for oneself. The underlying cause of faith is the fact that there is no greater pleasure than to perceive the Creator and to be filled with Him. But in order for a person to be able to perceive this pleasure, not for the sake of the self, there's a need for the Creator to be concealed. The state of concealment gives a person the possibility to observe the commandments without receiving any pleasure in return. Such an act is considered not for the sake of reward. When a person reaches this state and creates such a spiritual vessel, he immediately begins to see and to perceive the Creator with his entire being. The reason that earlier prompted and convinced him to work for the Creator for the sake of personal benefit disappears, and is even equal to death, because he was once connected to life and attained this feeling by virtue of faith. But if one begins to work on attaining faith above reason, then one is already in the corrected state. That person receives back his soul, the light of the Creator. Obtaining Lishma. The Kabbalistic names, though they were taken from our world, signify completely different objects and actions in the spiritual world, unrelated to those of this world. It's true that the spiritual objects are immediate sources of the objects found in this world. From this incongruence and the dissimilarity of the spiritual cause and effect found in our world, it can once again be seen how remote spiritual objects are from our egotistical concepts. In the spiritual world, a name signifies a particular disclosure of the Creator's light to a person through an action which is assigned that particular name. Similarly, in our world, every word discloses something, not of the object itself, but of our perception of that object. The phenomenon, or the object itself, is completely outside the realm of our perception. It's an entity in itself, absolutely incomprehensible to us. Undoubtedly, the object possesses form and qualities absolutely different from those that can be detected by our instruments or senses. The confirmation of this concept is exemplified by the fact that the depiction of an object in the visible range of the spectrum is completely different from the depiction which is obtained through X-rays or through heat frequencies. In any case, an object and the perception of that object exist separately. The latter arises out of the qualities of the person perceiving the object in question. Thus, the combination of the object, that is, of the true qualities of the object, and of the qualities of the one who perceives the object, or the perceiver, give rise to a third entity, a depiction of the object formed in the perception of the perceiver, which is based both on general qualities of the object itself and on the qualities of the perceiver. In the process of working with spiritual light, there are two distinct states of a person who wishes to receive and receives the light: the perception and the qualities of a person prior to receiving the light and after receiving it. There are also two states of the light that fills the vessel desires of a person: the state of the light prior to coming in contact with the feelings and desires of the person, and the state of the light after it has come into contact with the perceiver. In a prior state, the light is known as simple light because it bears no connection to the qualities of the perceiver, since all the objects other than the light of the Creator desire to receive and to be gratified by the light. There's no actual possibility to perceive or to examine, to sense, or even to imagine the light outside of ourselves. Thus, if we refer to the Creator as the Strong One, it's because at that moment we feel, that is, one who truly feels, His strength. But not having perceived any quality of the Creator, it's impossible to refer to Him by any name, because even the word creator connotes the fact that a person perceived this particular quality of the light. However, if a person pronounces the name of the creator, that is, enumerates his qualities, without having perceived these qualities through the senses, then this act implies that a person assigns names to the simple light prior to sensing the meaning of these names in oneself, which is equal to lying, since a simple light has no name. An individual who strives to ascend spiritually must avoid extraneous influences and protect personal convictions that have not yet matured until he receives the necessary perceptions, which can then support that person. The main defense and distancing must be aimed not at those people who are far from the Kabbalah, since they can only transmit indifference or utter at most negativity, indicating a great divergence from the state of the person involved in spiritual ascent. But the defense must be aimed at the people who are supposedly close to the Kabbalah. On the outside, a person may appear to reside at the very center of truth, to give all of the self to the Creator and to the observance of His commandments. But the actual reasons for that person's righteousness are not evident to anyone, and the essence of his actions may be to extract some benefit for himself. Such personalities or groups of people present a real danger to the ones who aspire to ascend spiritually, because a beginner sees an instance of ardent service to the Creator, but cannot verify whether it emanates from a true desire to perceive and understand the Creator, or whether it derives from an individual's upbringing, or worse yet, from considerations of prestige, and so on. At the same time, the beginner sees the tremendous powers that such righteous people can invoke to help them. And it's not clear to the beginner that such powers can only be used because there's no opposition to the actions of those powers from the side of egoism. Moreover, it is the egoism and the desire to prove that he is right that gives strength to these powers, whereas the real Kabbalah weakens the person in order to prompt that person to realize the need for the Creator. If a person feels a pull towards such external actions of these righteous people, then he becomes a slave to Pharaoh, since it is said in the Bible that the slavery to Pharaoh was pleasant for Israel. Since the Bible focuses only on the spiritual states of each of us, the slavery implies spiritual slavery, into which a beginner may fall and consequently come to regret all the efforts that were invested into the struggle with egoism. On the other hand, a beginner need not be concerned with the people who are far from the Kabbalah, because it's evident that there's nothing that he can learn from them, and hence they don't pose a threat of spiritual enslavement. Our egoism allows us to progress only when it feels fear. Then it pushes us into any kind of actions just to neutralize that feeling. Therefore, if a person would feel the fear of the Creator, he could develop the necessary strength and the desire to work. There are two kinds of fear: the fear of transgressing a commandment, and the fear of the Creator. There is a fear that prevents an individual from sinning, otherwise that individual would sin. If a person's already confident that he will not sin because all his actions are carried out solely for the sake of the Creator, that person will observe all the commandments anyway, not out of fear, but because this is the will of the Creator. Fear of transgression, or sin, is an egotistic fear, because it's prompted by the concern of doing harm to the self. The fear of the Creator is considered to be an altruistic fear, because it's prompted by a concern of not fulfilling the desire of the Creator out of feelings of love. But given a tremendous yearning of an individual to fulfill all that brings joy to the Creator, it's nonetheless very difficult to observe the commandments of the Creator, or actions that are desired by the Creator, because he does not see the necessity of fulfilling them. The fear emanating from the feeling of love must not be weaker than the egotistical fear. For instance, when one anticipates that one will be seen at the moment of committing a crime or simply a transgression, that person experiences feelings of suffering and shame. Gradually, a Kabbalist develops in the sense a feeling of anxiety that not enough is done for the Creator. This feeling is just as constant and as great as the ego's fear of punishment for obvious transgressions. A person learns only that which he desires to learn. A person learns only at the place where his heart desires. Starting from this supposition, it becomes clear that a person will never learn to observe certain rules and norms unless that person desires it. But what person wants to listen to moralizing, especially since, most often, a person doesn't perceive his own shortcomings? How then can anyone, even the individual aspiring to correct himself, attain the goal? A human being is created in such a way that he only desires to gratify himself. Therefore, he learns only for the sake of finding a means to satisfy his desires, and he will not learn something he does not need for gratifying himself, because it's his nature. Therefore, in order that he who desires to come closer to the Creator will be able to learn in what manner it's possible to act for the sake of the Creator, he has to ask the Creator to grant him a new heart, so that the altruistic desires can replace egoism. If the Creator will grant this request, then wherever he learns, he will find ways of pleasing the Creator. However, a person will never perceive anything that's in contrast to his heart, be it altruistic or egotistic. Thus, he will never feel obligated to something that will not please his heart. But once the Creator alters the egotistic heart to an altruistic one, an individual will immediately realize his obligations in order to be able to correct himself with the aid of the newly acquired attributes, as well as to discover that there is nothing more important in this world than to please the Creator. In addition, the qualities that a person begins to see as his shortcomings transform into virtues, because by correcting them, that person brings pleasure to the Creator. But the person who is not yet ready to correct himself will not be able to see his own shortcomings, because they're revealed to a person only to the degree that a person's able to correct them. All the actions of a human being with respect to the gratification of personal needs, as well as all the work for the sake of the self, disappear at the time when one departs from this world. All that one cared about and suffered for vanishes in one moment. Therefore, if a person's able to evaluate whether it's worth it to work for something in this world and then to lose it in the very last moment of his life, then that person may arrive at the conclusion that it's preferable to work for the sake of the Creator. In this case, the latter decision will make one realize the necessity of asking the Creator for help, especially if a great amount of effort has been invested into the observance of the commandments with the anticipation of gaining some personal benefit from this action. One who did not toil greatly in the Kabbalah has a lesser desire to transform his actions into actions for the sake of the Creator, since he doesn't have such a great deal to lose, while the work of transforming himself requires great effort. For this reason, a person must endeavor, with all the means at his disposal, to intensify his efforts in the work not for the Creator's sake, because this will subsequently lead to the development of the desire to return to the Creator and then to work for his name.